Christ arises in us. Christ arises in us. This is the Easter seminar, year 2005, here at the University of Healing campus in Campbell, California. We come now to lecture four. We've had lecture one, who and what do we call Christ? Lecture two, Christ is in me, how do I let the Christ out? Lecture three, the man must die so God can arise. And lecture four, I am the totality of Christ now. Yeah. We have the crazy idea that we are not the totality of God, of Christ right now. We have the idea that since we look different from each other, and since you look different from the candle holder here on the floor, and since you look different from this mutt that's coming walking in here, and the second mutt that's coming walking in here, love and button, but come. Yeah. You want to be in the picture here? Oh, yes. Oh, you're such good guys. It's so nice to see you. Are you happy, boys? We think we're different from them, and we think that the spiritual quality of ourselves are different from these guys. And is that true? We think that we're different from a stone. Dorothea, do you think you're different from a stone? A stone has atoms in it, and you have atoms in you. The only way is the way they're laid out. The way the atoms in you are distributed, and the way the atoms in the stone are distributed. Now, could a stone have been you just as well as you have been a stone?
That's what they
say. Uh-huh. And so we have this strange idea that we are not the allness of God. Now, we know that in a fetus, or it'd be pre-fetus, and an egg and a sperm cell getting together, that any cell in that egg could form any part of the being to follow. The eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, the thing, fingers, the tongue, the, whatever, it could be it. And what gives it the intelligence to know what it's supposed to do? So each one has a divine computer planted in it, and that divine computer is more than a gigabyte, more than a trigabyte, more than a zigabyte, more than any computer chip could ever be, because it can do such a vast variety of things. Can you imagine if we had a computer and a robot that could do all the things that a human being could do, including thinking? How vast that would be, how utterly amazing that would be. But yet, is it a possibility? Certainly, it's a possibility. It's a possibility that we may just all be robots. We may just all be computers. We may just all be acting as computers under the behest of some divinity that is far greater than we are, something of that nature, you know? Isn't that interesting? And this is what some people like to think. Our science fiction writers write science fiction that covers some of these possibilities, and it's a charming idea, isn't it? So, I am the totality of Christ right now. So, what is it we do? Think about it. What we have the tendency of doing is to saying that there's a God that created heaven and earth. And then there's a bigger God that created the space system, the universe around the earth, you know. And then there's a bigger God that created the space systems and the universes and the whatever might be beyond what the universe we're in. And then there's a bigger God that created all of that. And there's a bigger God that created all that. You know, ad infinitum. Kind of sounds silly, doesn't it? But it's what some people think. It's what some people propose as a valid condition of existence. And you know why they're doing that? They're having difficulty in saying that the allness of God could be in one tiny little atom. The allness of God could be in one tiny atom. Now, we talked about it in our last hour, or 2 hours ago, quantity and quality, remember? Are we a quantity of God, or are we a quality of God?
Quality.
And if we are a quality of God, is it a big quality or a little quality? The quality is without size, shape, or dimension, or volume, or whatever. It's the allness. Now, why is it we have such a little word to describe so much? I. Our little word to describe the allness, A-L-L. And the allness is the is, I-S. And why do we do that? It's kind of interesting, isn't it? We don't say, it's a supercalifragilisticexpialidocious God, you know. Or we don't say that, some of the Hindus have long names for their gods. And that's all right. And some of the Greek mythology writers gave long names to their gods, too. And some of the early Bible writers gave long names to their early biblical characters, like Methuselah, you know. Mephistopheles, you know, and all these other interesting characters that have come out of biblical writing. And it's fascinating. I am the totality of Christ right now. Me. I don't know what you guys are, but that's what I am.
I too.
I am the totality of God right now. And I have every single bit, every tiny instance of God. I am that tiny instance. I am the time before time, and the time after time, and the time that it was no time. I am the now in its allness, and its isness, and its oneness. I am the so fantastic, you know. I'm just so fantastic. I'm just so great and so wonderful. Yeah. Well, it's, am I the wind, or am I the thought of the wind? Am I the wind, or am I the concept of wind? Am I God, or am I the concept of God? And is the concept of God and God the same thing? If the concept of God and God are the same thing, if the concept of the Christ and the Christ are the same thing, then it's okay. Where does it vary? Where does it vary? You think that Ellen represents the concept of the Christ as a very pretty lady. You think Ingeborg represents the concept of God as a very sincere being. And Dorothea represents the concept of God as a person who thinks nothing's impossible for her to do. And Sylvia represents the concept of God as its allness. As its allness. Now, do any of you have an edge on the concept of God? Or is the concept of God exactly the same for all of us? You already know about me. I'm the allness of God. Sylvia's taking that same story. Okay, now, does my allness take away from your allness? Do we take out of the same kettle? No. So, we are the kettle. We do not take anything from it. We are the concept. And this is hard for us to conceive many times, that we are a concept. And Dorothea is a concept of woman. Not a very good concept, but the concept of woman. So Dorothea says, I want to be a better concept of the woman. And I say, well, Dorothea, what is your concept of woman? Well, my concept of woman is a person who is very talented, very capable, very sincere, very beautiful, very knowledgeable, and all that stuff. Well, then, what seems to be the problem? Well, I want to be wealthy, too. Okay, then let's create you as the concept of woman, as a wealthy woman. Can you handle that? Yes. Well, thank God. You're alive. I thought maybe you're sleeping. No. You did not write the quantum theory. You did not write the theory of relativity. You did not write the Big Bang theory. But what theory did you write? What theory did you write that you maybe never wrote down? What theory have you in your consciousness as a whole concept? And so, Dorothea, with all humility, says, every theory that ever was, could, or will be written. You wrote that? And she says, sure. How can you say you write that? Well, she says, I can write that because I am everything. I am the allness. I am not only woman, which I chose to use as a representation right at the moment, but I am the allness. I am the totality of everything. I am the fulfillment of everything. I'm the greatest, you know. And so we say, wow, isn't that marvelous? Now, what about Ingeborg? Is Ingeborg the greatest too? Nope. I have an edge on that. Ingeborg cannot be the greatest because I am the greatest. And when the greatest is compared to the greatest has only one greatest, right? Anything else is less great. So Ingeborg can only be less great. But you are the greatest in your consciousness, in your world, in your conceptualism, and Ingeborg is the greatest in her world of conceptualism. Ingeborg sees herself as just such a super fantastic glorious being that she is the allness of whatever it is she sees herself as. Okay? Okay. How does she get to be that way? How does she get to have that experience? She gets to have that experience by having the concept. There is no fact to any of this stuff. It's just having the concept. And when you have the concept, what takes place, Ingeborg?
I am
it. Exactly. When you have the concept, you am it. You are it. You have it. And that's what it's all about. So, when we say here, I am the totality of Christ now, and our first point is, the past is gone, I live today, now, aware that I am God, I am the Christ personified in being God. Now, does that shake any of your votes? I am the Christ personified in being God. It sort of puts God in a second place, doesn't it? I am the Christ personified in being God. Interesting. I am the Christ personified in being God. What does personified in being God means? Represented in being God. Why is the Christ, in this point of paragraph here, in this point of sentence, why is it more powerful than God? Why is the Christ more applicable to you and me than God? We say here, the past is gone. I live today, now, aware that I am God. I am Christ personified as being God. What do you think that God is? God is all, God is, God is everything. What do you think that Christ is?
Well, you said Christ is the spirit of consciousness.
Oh, we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
Where did we say that? Christ is the spiritual consciousness present in me. And where did that spiritual consciousness come from?
It's a quality of the allness of God, in the allness of God.
It's a quality of what?
Of the allness of God.
Spiritual consciousness is a quality of the allness of God. That seems a little tough. Can you define that? Spiritual consciousness is a quality of the allness of God. Now, I think that's sort of a big mouthful of a statement. Spiritual consciousness is a quality of God. Now, if you say the allness of God, then you're getting into another ballpark. But spiritual consciousness is a quality of God. Now, if you say it's a quality of God, let's take that a step further too. Where have we here? Christ is the energy or life force. Christ is the ideal type. Christ is my awareness of myself as God. Now, let's pay attention to those points there. They're kind of interesting. Christ is my awareness of my attention to God. Interesting? Christ is my awareness of myself as God. If Christ is my awareness of myself as God, then it's presumed that God represents the broader picture, and Christ represents the awareness, the quality of being, the quality of who we are, as it says here, our spiritual consciousness. Christ is the spiritual consciousness present in me. Christ is the energy of light or life force which permeates me. Christ is the ideal type of who I am, me. Christ is my awareness of myself as God. And now we're saying, the past is gone. I live today, now, aware that I am God. I am the Christ personified in being God. Perhaps the word personified is a word that might give us a little difficulty here. What do you think that personified means, Ellen?
Expressed.
Personified, expressed.
But expressed in, if I say personified, I would say expressed in a human body.
Ah, personified as what? As a human body. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you would say, I am the Christ personified in being God. So in other words, I am God personified in the Christ, in the human body. In other words, our Christness, our Christ-likeness is, can be aware in our human body. Is this what you're saying?
Right.
Well, why did Jesus the Christ have to make this change from Jesus the man to Jesus the Christ? And when Jesus the Christ moved from the human attitude of himself into the divine attitude of himself, the Christ's attitude, he no longer was the human part.
But he did this to show us what I can do, you can do too, and even greater things.
Right. The things that I can do, you can do also, and even greater things than these shall you do. That's a positive statement in that direction. But why is it that we say the past is gone, and I live today, now, aware that I'm God? Why do we say the past is gone? What did we do in the past?
The past is actually our humanity.
Oh. In other words, you're saying that the past is quantitatively qualified as our humanity, our humanness, our physicality, our... No, it's an interesting idea, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, why would anyone ever want to dwell in that area and stay there? Why wouldn't everyone want to move on into the more spiritually consciousness, the spiritual consciousness that we have the possibility of being in our Christ awareness, as we said at the beginning? Christ is a spiritual consciousness present in me. Why wouldn't we want to dwell more in the spiritual consciousness? Any thought? We want to dwell in the limited awareness of ourselves when we have not trained ourselves to be aware that we are the allness of God. Now, you have the capacity to play the piano, and you can play the piano like this. You don't need to practice. You don't need to learn music. You don't need to know music. I say, play Beethoven's Fifth, and you play it. You never saw it, you never heard it, you never had a touch relationship with it, but it's in your allness, and you play it. And I say, Ingeborg, sing like Anzio Pinza. Well, he's a man. I don't care. Sing like him. And so she sings like Anzio Pinza, you know? And I say to Dodie Dorothea, I say, Dorothea, I want you to swim like a fish. And Dorothea said, I've never learned how to swim. And I said, Dorothea, you never say that to me. I say, Dorothea, swim like a fish. Dorothea says, I swim like a fish. And you dive into the water, and you swim like a fish. Now, you know what science is developing today, Dorothea? They are developing gills for people to wear. Gills that process 250,000 bubbles of water through them per second or per minute, and allowing them to have enough air to breathe comfortably underwater, like you would on land. You know, that it can take that much oxygen out of the water, making it available for you to breathe. Isn't that amazing? No. Who would have ever thought of that? Who would have ever thought that you take the idea from the gills, from the fish, and make it as a swimming tool for man? Well, now, anybody got a suggestion? Ingeborg, give me a suggestion.
Honest one.
Ingeborg, we are talking about having gills to swim like a fish.
Yes.
Now, I'm saying make a suggestion in that direction, such as we swim with our thought, and we do not need to breathe underwater. We do not need to breathe out of the water. We do that because it's a pleasure. We create ourselves swimming, moving, going, being, whatever, regardless of what is necessary, such as energy, you know, such as food, such as water to drink, such as air to breathe, and stuff like that. We create ourselves immune to that, or not immune to it, but it's unnecessary. Immune is a good word, too. But we create, can you see what I'm saying? So, when I offer these suggestions to you, I'm asking you the question, not because I'm so interested in your answer, but I'm interested in what level of our awareness that you're in with us. Are you in the dreamer level? Are you in the consciousness level of imagination, of creativity, of way out wonderful ideas, you know? Because that's where we are. We're in this wonderful creation of way out imagination. And that's exciting. Now, if I can train you in your world to dream your wildest dream, to think your wildest thoughts, to be absolutely without response to what is normal and reasonable and logical, and to think beyond that level, then you are moving into your Christ consciousness. Because would you think that the Christ consciousness had anything to it which is impossible? I shouldn't think so. Do you think God has anything to it which is impossible?
No.
No. Why not? Because it is everything. And we said we weren't going to use the word it for God, but it is everything. God is everything. The Christ is everything. You and I are everything. Isn't that exciting?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we realize and think and know that we're everything, what's happening? Then we're living, acting, and being in that awareness that we're everything, and it is a lot of fun. Now, the past is gone. I live today, now, aware that I am God. I am the Christ personified in being God. I am God. I live in the now. I live in this awareness. You see, for me to say to you, all time is now, and for you to say, that's true, I'll say, well, why can you say that's true? Well, you know, you don't really know. Why can you say all time is now? Scientists want us to say that it's now, all time is now, but why can you say that? Yes?
Because whatever I think is just right in this
Ellen,
moment.
If I gave you a box, and in that box was every diamond ever created or ever on the earth. It's a big box. And I said to you, Ellen, tell me, which diamond is more beautiful than the other? Now, they're all in the box. And the box is naturally illumined by itself, you know. The fire of the burning inside each diamond and all these lovely things. So Ellen looks at that, and I say, Ellen, choose the diamond that you think is the most beautiful. And Ellen says, I live in the now. And each diamond is absolutely beautiful. Well, here, Ellen, I'll give you a little teeny one. And Ellen says, thank you. Here, Ellen, I'll give you a great big one. Ellen says, thank you. Ellen is not planning to have her wealth depend on a diamond. She's not planning to have her experiences depend on a diamond. The diamond is in her life merely as a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So, you find the diamond that you think is the most beautiful. Now, that's a relative term, and that doesn't mean anything. It's a relative term when you say the most beautiful. Now, how do you say the most beautiful? How do you say the most beautiful? Which says to you the most beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, which is the most beautiful to you?
Which has the most light sparkle.
Well, how do you determine most?
We can't say that because I would make a comparison between the diamonds.
Ellen, if you are with me at all here, you will say, as we have said in our sentence here, the past is gone, I live today, now. Okay? Now. Which diamond is the most beautiful? This diamond. There is no other diamond. It is the only diamond there is. It is the allness diamond. It's the isness diamond. It's the diamond that is the only diamond there is. There is no other diamond. There is no other diamond. Now you say, but you had a box full of them. Yeah, that was a relative statement.
Okay.
And are we talking relative?
No.
Or we're talking absolute?
Absolute.
And so there's only, and what is this diamond that you're holding in your hand, Ellen? I don't see it. And you say, it's a concept. I give you the concept diamond, which has neither beauty nor form nor anything, but it's a concept diamond. I give you the concept love. I give you the concept of marriage. I give you the concept of wealth. I give you the concept of health. And you see, now you've got all these concepts. Is there a time, space, place for that concept, any concept?
No.
No. The concept is as equally present in your mind as it is in mine. It's as equally present in each one of us as it is in the other. It's fantastic. But you see, this is the important thing for us to think about. We, as the Christ consciousness, live in the awareness of concepts. And the concept, the big concept, is what?
God.
The allness concept is God. And out of the allness concept, they're born all the little concepts. But the little concepts are as much the allness concept as the allness concept. Because out of the little concept could be born the allness concepts, and out of the allness could be born the littleness concepts. But you see, they're just concepts. Now, what gives these concepts purpose, place, and thing in our world? Our thought about them. Okay. I am the totality of Christ now. I am Christ in the image and likeness of God as being created by myself, God, as God in all. Now, we remember from the Bible story that God said, let us create man in our image. In our image, let us create them. Isn't that interesting? Let us create man in our image. In our image, let us create them. Who is this us God's talking about?
The law.
The principle, the law. And who is them that God is talking about in creating man? Male and female. Them. He says it right clearly and perfectly. And let us put them where?
In
our image and in our perfection. Now, could God, in doing this, as we are told in chapter 1 of Genesis, could God have created man a little less than the angels? Could God have created man without the knowledge of the tree of good and evil? Could man have created man without knowledge within him, without judgment, without reason, without logic, and so forth? Could God created man as everything, and so in man is everything. There's nothing that is left out to be found about later. Yes, you understand?
Right.
And so, now, who then makes whatever it is that man is, good or evil?
The judgment of man.
The judgment of man itself. Our own judgment is what limits us or unlimits us. Our own judgment is what frees us or ties us up in knots. Now, where are you ready on this scale of judgment? Where are you ready on this scale of unfoldment? It'd be very interesting to see where you're ready for. Because I am the totality of Christ now. I am Christ in the image and likeness of God as being created by myself, God, as all. Now, what does that all mean? What is the allness of God that I am created in the likeness of? Now, we could go to the Bible, biblical story, and we could find what it has to say, but that's just one man's opinion. One man talking to his children, telling them the story of the Bible, telling them the story of creation, and making up the story as he goes along from his own intuitive awareness of what it possibly might have been. Do you know within yourself the creation story? Do you know within yourself every story that has ever been told? Do you know within yourself every piece of music that has ever been written? Every play that has ever been written or performed? Do you know, do you have within you, on your CD, every movie that ever could be played or would be played or can? Yes, you are the allness. And you see, as this allness, we are selective. Now, as an allness right now, in this life experience, what is it that you choose to experience in this life? Dorothea lived a very dramatic life filled with learning and books and wonderful things about history and philosophy and religion and all these things, and she was very erudite in that, very learned in this, very studied in it, underlining three times every passage that turned around, and that's lovely. Now, is that what Dorothea wants to do or wants to be, or is that the area that Dorothea wants to have in her life to be fulfilled? Or does Dorothea want in her life the ability to be a dreamer? Does Dorothea want in her life the ability to live in the imagination of happiness and harmony and love? Does Dorothea want to walk down the street and create each scenario that she sees in a beautiful form? She sees the two children playing, and she's then happy and joyful and filled with love and harmonious with one another and just absolutely pleasant as could be. She sees two adults who look like they're angry at each other, and she says, peace, and they are peace, and she fills them with such love for one another that before she leaves their presence, they're hugging each other. Two men hugging each other on the street, saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. And people say, what's all this about? And they said, it's none of your business. But no, people wouldn't ask. Because she creates this in her world, and it's in her vision. She creates a world of harmony, peace, of love, of abundance. She creates a world in which everyone has sufficient to live harmonious in whatever they wish to do. Well, wouldn't that take away the rights of those people not to have it? The rights of those people to live in poverty if they wished? Hey. No one has the right to live in our world in any way other than what we want them to live. And if you are a beautiful person, everybody in your world is a beautiful person. If you are a schnook, everybody in your world is a schnook, whether you like it or not. And you say, well, surely the president is a schnook, but then you look at the president and you'll see things that he does that calls him a schnook. So, you see, this is what we do to ourselves. We are the creator of our world. We are God. And as the creator of our world, we are bringing into our world all of the wonder, the magic, and the experiences that reflect who we are. That's the Christ in you. Now, why did some stories have God sent his only begotten Son to bless the world and lift the world from sin and travail. Why did he do that? Did God create a lousy world and have to send somebody down to clean it up? You see, this is what humans write in their tales of angels coming down to earth and straightening things out where man's making a mess. Man is not making a mess. Man is doing exactly what he wants to do in exactly the way that he wants to do it. And as he does this, what is he doing? He is being himself and having fun. And if he doesn't like the game, what does he do? He changes it. He goes and plays a different game. When the boys are tired of playing soccer, they go and play football. When they're tired of playing football, they go play basketball. When they're tired of basketball, they go skating. When they're tired of skating, they go hockey. When they're tired of hockey, they go dancing. When they're tired of dancing, they go play chess or checkers. When they're tired of that, the game possibilities, you know that, are infinite for playing games. And the game possibilities in life are equally as infinite. And that's why we say this here. Because I use the concept of unconditional love, I live as all and see through all outward symbols and appearances, seeing the divine reality of me in and through all whom I vision. Because I use the concept of unconditional love, I live as all and see through all outward symbols and appearances, seeing the divine reality of me in and through all whom I envision. Each time I look in the mirror, I see only God in me. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Sylvia, sing the song.
Now I am only perfection, and I'm perfect in every way. Each time I look in the mirror, I see only God in me. To know me is to love me. I know I am God, but I am. Now I am only perfection, and I'm perfect in every way. Now I know I am God, God I am. Now I know I am God, God I am.
You see, each time I look in the mirror, I see God in me. Each time each of us look in the mirror, we see God. Now, do we see a God of wrinkles and a God of frowns and a God of unhappiness? Do we see a God of being drawn and pale and sickly and dark under the eyes? Or do we see a God of beauty and wisdom and love? Now, I'm telling you, it does not take a great deal of imagination to look in the mirror and see yourself looking great. It doesn't. It takes a lot of imagination to look in the mirror and see you looking not great. Let's see, where are those pimples? Where are those wrinkles? Where are those hairs sticking out? You know, where is this? Where is that? And when you look, you find it. And what do you do? Now, because you know you're God, this is what you do. This is what you do. You buy a mirror that magnifies. Because you know that your skin is beautiful. You know you can look at a magnified picture of your skin and it will be just like a baby's bottom. Absolutely beautiful, gentle, tender, perfect, right?
Right.
And you see, I'm happy I came in on that a little bit. But you see, this is what it's all about. You are the creator of your life. You're the creator of every experience in your life. You're the creator of every person that comes into your world. You're the creator of all that you are. And it's great. Now, do you want to do that? Do you want to be such a creator? Do you want to be such a being that lives in this marvelous state of consciousness? Do you want to do that? Well, that's up to you. When you look in the mirror, what do you see?
God in me.
I only see God in me. That's great. Now, what kind of a God do you see in me? Mm-hmm. What kind of a God do you see in yourself? Do you see a God that needs some improvements?
No.
Now, when Michelangelo, now it's Michelangelo, not Leonardo da Vinci. But when Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel, he painted the face of God. Did you notice that? Did you ever look at the face of God? The face of God does not have a bunch of bumps and pimples on it, does not have a bunch of wrinkles and things like that. Look at the face real carefully. The face of God is absolutely a baby's bottom. Absolutely. And the same for Adam. Adam's so laid back, of course, but he painted him perfect. Why didn't he paint him badly? When he did the sculpture of Moses, what did he do? He put two tufts of hair swirling upward on each side of his head like horns. And they were to represent his, not horny nature, but his devilish nature. And you see, that's kind of a tough thing. Now, what did Michelangelo do when he did that? He painted his own devilish nature. Because every statue he did was a replica of himself. His statue of David was himself in his prime as a beautiful young man, absolutely gorgeous in every respect. Because he was a strong man. I mean, when you go wielding a chisel and a hammer, you know, all day long for days on end, you got to be building up some muscle. And then you got to drag that marble around by yourself a lot of times, and you got to push, and you got to twist, and you got to turn, and you got to, you know, be really careful. He must have had a body just like, not like Adonis, just like Hercules, you know? Fantastic. But when he looked in the mirror, what did he see? If you notice that all the bodies that Michelangelo did were very healthy bodies. All the people were very healthy people. He chose healthy models, mainly himself. And now you look at Leonardo da Vinci, and all of the people Leonardo da Vinci painted were a little effeminate. They were a little bit light. And the reason for that is because that was what Leonardo da Vinci was experiencing. And you say, oh, surely not. Yes, it was. He was a very definite, sensitive, caring artist. He had a very, and if you want to use the word effeminate, he had a very artistic attitude about him. And he did beautiful work. And it's represented in the picture he does of himself. And when Michelangelo did his, he had strength and vitality. Now, in the movies they present of Michelangelo, they don't show him to be so strong. They show him to be emaciated because he didn't have enough to eat. Well, my God, he always had enough to eat. He always had enough to eat. He ate like a horse. And he was surrounded by helpers who ate like horses. If you would, and that's why the scaffolds had to be so strong, because they were so heavy. They were so weighty, and the scaffolds would break down under their weight so often. But, you see, what sort of an image do you have of yourself? What sort of an image do you have of who you are? How do you create yourself? Think about that. Because I use the concept of unconditional love, I live as all and see through all outward symbols and appearances, seeing the divine reality of me in and through all what I envision. Now, have you gotten to that point for yourself? And don't answer me. This is where you want to be. But this takes a little imagination. Did I give you some imagination in the little stories that I've told you during the talks today?
Yeah.
I gave you a lot of good little illustrations. And one of them was the illustration of the little...
Elf.
The little elves, the little fairies, the little gnomes that Ellen's daughter had guiding her around the house, and Ellen had guiding her around the house, and not letting anybody know about it because that was sort of a private, secret little thing. And you say, she just worked very hard and didn't let anybody know that she worked so hard. No, it had nothing to do with it. You see, we live in a very wonderful world, very special world, filled with magic, filled with glory, filled with wonderment. And it's up to us now how we're going to benefit from that. Are you ready to take that home with you? Are you ready to experience that in no uncertain terms? As the Christ, as God, I live in the infinity of allness, oneness, isness, being neither happy or fulfilled, but being all. So, you say to yourself every moment of your life, I like me, I like me, I like me. I am divine order, I am peace. I like me, I like me, I like me. I am divine order, I am peace. I like me, I like me, I like me. I am divine order, I am peace. What are you doing? What are you doing? You're putting in motion for yourself the most powerful causes that you could ever have. You are resurrecting Jesus or the Christ. Which one?
Christ.
You are resurrecting the Christ in you, as you, through you, being you. And as you say these things, that is exemplified, that is responded to in very beautiful ways, and it's fantastic. Can you see that? This is what we all want to do and how we all want to live our life. This is how we all want to express ourselves and be ourselves, because that is the essence of who we are. No. You cannot have that. You cannot be that unless you claim it for yourself. You cannot enjoy a life of abundance, peace, harmony, health, wealth, goodness, and every other thing unless you claim it. Because if you're going to go around claiming its opposite and saying, I'm poor, I don't have, I'm sick, I'm unwell, then that's what you're claiming and that's what you're being. Now, is that what you want to do? Is that what you want for yourself?
No.
You have to decide what you want for yourself, and like we say here, as the Christ of God, I live in the infinity of allness, oneness, isness, being neither happy or fulfilled, but being all. Why not either happy or fulfilled?
Because that's still a limitation.
It's a relative term, right?
Yes.
Are all of these terms pretty much relative terms?
Yeah, because the description of it is relative.
I'm sorry?
Because the description of an aspect...
The description would have to be relative, right. And so, ours is to look at it at a relative term, but look beyond it. To look beyond all of these limited concepts that come to our attention and see them in their allness. You all know what a ship's captain is, the captain of a ship. The captain of a ship is called the master of the ship. The captain of the ship is called God. The captain of the ship in olden days could do anything he wanted to any member of the crew, and they couldn't complain. The captain of the ship, especially even a pirate ship, was even worse. He could do anything he wanted, and not one word could be spoken against him. But the captain of maritime ships was much the same way. And the captains could marry people, and they could divorce people, and they could do all the things that the law allowed. Because of what? Because they were on a ship which was on its own island, on its own continent, on its own world, you know? And so, everyone had their place, and everyone had their job. And the captain was not there to be a sadist, at least he wasn't supposed to be, but he was there just to be a person who got things done. And he worked everyone to the nth degree. And everyone loved working for a captain who was sincere and dedicated and diligent, who was definite. So, the captain shared all foods equally. The captain made sure that the water was shared equally with everyone until they got water. The captain made sure that there was rest time for everyone equally. The captain made sure that everyone lived harmoniously with one another. Now, the captain told everyone what to do. And when anyone didn't do what the captain says, he got rid of them. Maybe had them walk the plank. You know what that means? A plank was stuck out over the edge of the ship and tied to the railing, and then the recalcitrant being was told to walk out over the plank and stand there until the captain said, jump or come back. Now, that could scare the living daylights out of you. that could make a Christian out of you. So to speak, it could make a believer out of you. Well, the captain was absolutely in charge. Now, if the captain ever wavered in his belief in his command, in his belief in himself, in his belief in his ability to control, direct, and guide the men in the paths that he wanted them to go, what would happen to them? He would be dead. They would throw him overboard. Any lily-livered, incompetent being as a captain didn't last very long. Now, the storm came up and the captain was washed overboard. And everyone will speak that their word to that, because the captain was nothing. But a captain who is something, everyone stands by him. Some because they have to. But everyone stands by him. The first mate, the second mate, all the men on the ship stand by him. But he believes in himself. Now, he may be scared to his toes, but he believes in himself, and he passes this belief along to his men. And he brings them through fair weather and sad. He brings them through everything, and they believe in him. And when they come ashore at the final payment of their voyage, they say, "When can we go again, Captain? I believe in you. When can we go again, Captain? I believe in you." When most of the men say that, then you can be sure that captain believed in himself. So when you believe in yourself, when you believe that you're the captain of your ship, you know, the master of your soul, that sort of thing, you know, when you take every experience that comes into your life and act like the captain. Now, we could replace that word with the Christ. We could say the Christ, but the word captain has its own set of meanings that are very specific and very interesting. But we could easily use the word Christ. If Christ were made captain of a ship, what kind of a ship would he run? Boy, oh boy, it would be a ship to end all ships. The most beautiful, most well cared for. His men would be doing their jobs out of deep dedication and love for him and for the ship and for doing their jobs and for themselves mostly. And they would do everything from the very heart and soul of themselves, and they would be wonderful and beautiful. So if we can think of ourselves, our Christ self, as the captain of a ship, and being a good captain, being a Christ captain, having every man on board that ship wanting to support us in everything we say what to do, wow, have we made it? Have we walked the path of our statement here, Christ arises in us. Christ arises in us. Christ the captain arises in us. Christ God arises in us. Christ the spiritual leader, the spiritual director, the spiritual allness arises in us and is in us. And it is so wonderful and so powerful and so good. It's so beautiful, and it's who we are. Today, we've had a lovely adventure. It is Easter, the time, historically, when Christ was coming out of the tomb as a spiritually illumined being. And it's a time for us to come out of our tombs of attitudes that held us in bondage as a spiritually illumined being and walk straight and wonderful and powerful, recognizing that we are whole and perfect and we are fantastic and we love ourselves and we love our world and we love everything that we're in. Christ arises in us. Who and what do we call Christ? Christ is in me. How do I lift the Christ out? The man must die so God can arise. And I am the totality of Christ now. We've had a good session today. Thank you for being here and allowing me to present these ideas to you. Any one of them that has any value to you, put it to work in your life, and watch the miracles take place in your world. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.